out to everybody, and thank y'all again so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and not alone. After 10 years of trudging through the scary darkness, I got Philly with me.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios for 10 years now, a decade.
We know we're behind, right? We know we dropped the ball. It was just about 3 weeks ago, I think, is when it actually was.
Just don't think about it. No. On September 14th.
13th,
2013 was the first episode.
I believe so.
We've been doing it every week, ever since. I mean, of course, we've taken off here and there, but for 10 years, we've been doing it.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Time goes by.
The very first episode that you can go back and ever listen to, we recorded at Kyle's kitchen table.
Was that where we did the first one?
First two, we were at your kitchen table.
I think you're right.
And then we started doing all of our interviews in my son's room.
Yeah.
We started bouncing it all around, and then we built the studio, and then it just went on in from there. But yeah, that's where it all started, was right there. We got the box of all the original soundboard, all the original equipment, all the original everything is still stored away.
In case
something happens.
It was a challenge back then. There wasn't how to do it books and videos on YouTube. It took a while to assemble the components to do it.
Because also, it had been a lot easier if we were intelligent when we started this whole thing. So we really started on our back foot to try to figure this out.
Yeah.
But here we are.
That's right. And on the first episode, what did we talk about? Oh, we talked about Bigfoot. You know, that's not broad.
That's all it says.
It just says Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
The copper mines in Michigan and mysterious Rock Lake.
Yeah.
So let's go back and kind of talk about what that first episode was all about. Now, if you're not familiar, Isle Royale is a small island in Lake Superior near the Canadian border. And there's evidence, believe it or not, that someone was mining copper in that area starting around 5,300 BC. So, you know, 7,000 years ago. And this mining continued until 1200 BC. Around 1000 AD, mining was restarted again, and that lasted until 1320 AD. Now, they would work the rock. This is what scientists and stuff have been saying, archaeologists and stuff. They were using fire and cold water to break the copper ore into smaller pieces. Now, how they knew that, nobody really knows. And then they would transport the copper to other locations. Now, one of the mines discovered, Cam, was 3/4 mile long. It was 400 feet wide, and it was 10 to 30 feet deep, and it also had a series of connecting tunnels. Now, scientists and engineers estimate that it would take 10,000 men 1,000 years to develop the extensive operations carried on in that region. It's estimated that a total 1.5 billion pounds of copper.
Billion, with two L's?
Were mined by these unknown people. And despite its large size, there's no evidence of any of the workers has ever been found, nor their tools.
That's the craziest part. And I remember us discussing it, of course, before we put it on the show, talked about it, was the thing that we could never get over was how they've not found...
They cleaned up their job site.
Well, even like vast villages that held everything. Like they legitimately, when they left... They left.
I think what probably happened is if, say, later on, a Native American came by the work, what was left, and they found a pickaxe or something, they probably picked it up. You're like, I don't know what this tool is, but it might be useful. You know, people just over time would have cleaned up the site. But it is remarkable that they didn't find anything. Here's another thing that's remarkable. Not only were they mining in North America, because, of course, we're told that, you know, Christopher Columbus, you know, was first or maybe Leif Erikson. But this is long before that. How did somebody, because we don't know where these people came from. We know that the copper ended up in like the Middle East and places like that. So how did somebody travel all the way to an island in Lake Superior, know that the copper was there, mine it, move it out of there? Like, how did all the logistics of how that happened?
Because how did they run a scan?
I don't know how to find copper.
Yeah.
Now, the late, great Philip Coppens in his book, he said this about the mines, and this is a quote. It says, it is likely that the mines were only worked in the summer, with the workforce moving further south during the winter months or returning home across the ocean. This could explain the absence of buildings. People living here in the winter need buildings to survive, but that's not necessarily so during the summer months. As there are no such buildings, it suggests that no one actually lived there. Equally important is the fact that there are no signs of copper melting factories required for the future use. This means that the copper was used elsewhere, as the copper required further handling for it to be useful. It is not certain where they moved during the winter, but some have suggested Azitlan or Rock Lake, which are both located in modern-day Wisconsin. As these sites, many graves were discovered, as well as thousands that were cremated, and one of the graves contained a man with a hammer. A similar hammer was discovered at one of the mines and somewhere else nearby. So maybe he's right. Maybe they were not living there permanently, but they were, you know, just traveling up there during the warmer months, mining and then backing out during the winter. No one
that
really
makes
knows.
More sense, right? That makes more sense. Folks, here's a little behind the scenes I may have talked about. Philip Coppins, I actually was in contact with him to be the very first guest on the show when he started getting sick.
I remember that.
Remember that? And I'd reached back out to him before I realized he was in the hospital, and I'd spoken to his, I believe it was his wife, who had reached back out or responded.
Yeah.
And she was like, Philip's not feeling well and all, he's going to be in the hospital. She's like, I'll let him know, you know, that y'all are thinking about him and the whole deal. And I'm like, yeah, and if you need anything that we could provide, you know, whatever it was, talking to her, and then it wasn't long until he was gone.
Man, I wish I remember the name of his book, but there's an excellent book by Philip Coppins. I suggest anybody, if you're interested in history, an alternative history, that you should definitely pick up. Just look up Philip Coppins. But you're right. I see his wife all the time on Ancient Aliens. She's kind of picked up in some of the stuff that he was working on. One more thing before we get out of here and move on. Philip Coppins also said about the mining there. He says that it's not clear who these ancient miners were, but we do know that the mining abruptly ended in 1200 BC. This conveniently coincides with the end of the Bronze Age in Europe. The copper located in the Lake Superior area is some of the purest copper in the world, yet less than 1% has been discovered in America. It is clear that someone was mining copper here in America and then shipped it across the ocean for use abroad. Who they were remains a mystery. Now, I remember when we did that first episode and we later talked with some other people, I don't remember who the person was, but they suggested that the Polynesians were all about shipping, right?
Phoenicians. Well, they found it on a Phoenician vessel.
They did find someone, one of the Phoenician vessels, but the Phoenicians weren't into copper mining. That's what they're saying.
No,
they were like the transport, right? They were the UPS or the FedEx or DHL.
Yeah.
They were just there to bring the copper back to Europe. And they were hired. They hired them that way. But they found, there's so much copper that was mined there, and when it stopped, that ended the Bronze Age. It's almost like all the copper from that area was fueling the entire Bronze Age, which is crazy to think about.
Well, what it makes me think about is this. We know that the Phoenicians were hired many times by the Egyptians.
That's right.
So the Egyptians would hire them, like you talked about, is they are nothing but transport. That's what the Phoenicians do. They would show up. They would load the smelted copper from the Great Lakes onto their ships and sail home, right? That's the whole thing. As you're talking about, what it makes me think of is whoever was having the men ship the copper and pay the copper were the people making the money. It was their decisions after all that time, whatever, you can call them companies, you could call them cabals, secret organizations, whatever it was that was going through all this work to get it. Because back in that time, the average everyday guy couldn't just jump in his boat and sail over here and get him a load of copper to bring back and sell.
No, you're right.
Like, it had to be a serious business that was handed down time through families, through generations of not only knowing about the copper, but knowing where North America was.
That's what's so crazy. You know, when you talk to most people and they talk about the Bronze Age, you think about them being not very sophisticated, not very scientific, but obviously if they could find the biggest, world's largest copper mine on the whole planet, they were able to find it and then mine it and move it.
Like you brought up, how do you know? How do you know that's where it is? Unless maybe you have older books, that talk about it. You have older scrolls or whatever written down where people have known about this, again, for generations.
Well, I think
you know that it's there.
I think you're right. I think there was an older ancient civilization that was very advanced that somehow were wiped out by the Younger Dryas or something like that. You know, this is what Graham Hancock talks about all the time. But it almost seems like if you go back, there was an advanced civilization, something made that civilization collapse and we as a human species had to restart.
Yeah.
But perhaps in that old advanced civilization, you're right, they knew where all the good mining was. And it was documented. Maybe it was in a book in the Library of Alexandria. Who knows?
Well, you remember.
Somebody knew.
We've talked, there are whispers. You know, there's always these crazy theories that you hear that's kind of behind the scenes theories. And some of the behind the scenes theories, if you will, was that Columbus married a woman whose father was a man that was a masterful shipping fella also, and that they had the maps and all the layout of all of North America, and that they had known about it for years, that they had gotten it from the church, and through the shipping that way, they had made their fortune. And then when he married into it, he was provided some of this information after a period of time, like, hey, look, we're going to kind of give you the keys to the castle too. So you're part of the family. Don't let anybody know. And what did he do to try to find fame? He ran out and started telling everybody what he could do. And then he went and this is where it led. That's one of the theories that kind of the behind the scenes of how all that actually went down. What it makes me always think of too is how would you argue that they weren't, like, we know now that copper isn't in America. It's right. Not in North America. It's all over. Given the dates now, there's no argument that people were sailing. I don't know why people in academia now can't see, and I'm sure they probably are. It's changing. That if that was possible, then you have to take of every story of everything that's ever been found in North America, and you have to reevaluate it with that same scrutiny. Because now it's a lot easier to safely assume that there were other people over here doing other things. If that copper mine was going on and they knew that much about it, maybe there was other, like they talk about the blue pigment.
Yeah.
In South America actually comes from Georgia.
Right. Well, and think of the Native Americans there at the time. All these guys show up and they're mining this copper. They had no use. They're like, what are you guys?
Yeah, why do you need those rocks?
You're taking these rocks out of the ground?
I'm sure trade for the Native Americans in that area was awesome at the time.
I'm sure.
And then again, it makes you wonder, did any of them go back with them?
It's very, very possible. And we're talking about, look at the time, 5300 BC.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about what's reportedly, the Great Pyramids were built around 4,500 years ago. I honestly think they're older than that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what mainstream academia will tell you, is about 4,500 years ago. This was going on 3,000 years earlier than the construction of those.
Yeah. And what was it being used for prior to that? Like, what was all that copper? Where did it go? Where is the rest of that copper?
It's probably been just mixed with other metals and stuff
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. What did it go into building? Like, if we not found all of that, well, there's still other things. Like you and I were discussing with Göbekli Tepe. They've uncovered a few more items that's changing everything. Vulture shamans. That's basically what they've uncovered.
Yeah.
Vulture shaman.
You know, and like, you know, when you trade in your aluminum cans or whatever for recycling, they melt it down and reuse it. What if the copper in the very microphone cord we're speaking into was once in that mine?
That would be awesome.
It's just been melted and refurbished over and over and over and over and over.
That'd be cool.
Right? Because there's only so much of it on the planet. You're not getting any more of it unless, I guess, a meteor, I guess, could bring a little bit more of it, but yeah.
Isn't that like the liquid copper? That's like the IED stuff. I don't want a copper, like a somewhat semi-liquid copper meteorite to slam into this planet. Sounds terrible.
It does sound terrible. Also in that first episode, we were talking about it. I made mention of it in that a few minutes ago, is the Rock Lake Pyramids. This is also in Wisconsin. And apparently, the legend has it that the Aztecs once occupied this area and they built these pyramids. And then at some point, the Native Americans, it was the ground was really dry. It was a drought and they'd begun praying to their gods. And one of their gods, you know, brought them water and it filled up this lake. And now the pyramids are underneath the water. Now, there have been people over time that have been diving, or when the lake's gotten low and the clarity is very clear, they said that they can see these pyramids. Other scientists have gone out there and looked, and they said, man, we can't find anything. So no one really knows, is it a real thing or is it just folklore? You know, and that's the area, Aztlan. You know, that's why it's named Aztlan, is because they believe that the Aztecs once occupied that area. And that is a theory, too. You've heard about, most people, when they think of the Aztecs, they think about them in South America, which is true because that's where they were. But if you go back far enough in time, they say that they started out in North America and migrated to South America. And that's where eventually their civilization collapsed, but it had been in North America at one time, which is interesting to think of, because when you think of, you know, all the cool cultures that were in South America, you think of first like the Olmecs, then you think of the Aztecs and then the Incas and then the Mayans. But it's wild to think about maybe, you know, 100,000 years ago, there was Aztec cities in North America.
Yeah.
All the way up, you know, in Wisconsin or Ohio, Pennsylvania, places like that, there's these.
And you have to keep in mind, too, they was probably, the population was vastly smaller everywhere. So, like, when you think about the cities or the established areas that they might have been, it wasn't as huge as what we're thinking. You know what I mean? Like, until it got down where they got settled.
Yeah.
That's when it started blooming. Because it seems like you're pointing out, when it got down into the Amazon, that's when they started building, like, entire like roadways,
yeah,
giant cities, aqua, all the stuff that was reclaimed by the Amazon.
And I like how the Amazon itself, they can tell that a large portion of it was planted.
Yes.
Like there were certain plants brought there, and then of course with no one tending to them, they took over.
Oh man.
But there's like only, if you look at all the species of major trees and stuff, they say it's much smaller than you would think.
Oh yes.
Because somebody had brought them there and they just
took over.
Well, they
say most of it's not native.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It was brought there and then it just got out of hand. Heck, if you think about like, what's the one up in the, that was found like in 1911? Oh, I can't think of it. My mind's gone blank. But several of those ancient sites weren't even discovered until the 20th century.
Yes.
They were just consumed by the Amazon. And there's people that have claimed that they've been in airplanes and stuff and seen stuff.
This
was long before you could drop pins on a GPS map. And then they could never find it again.
The cargo, the people that flew the cargo planes would report this way back, like in the early 1900s, right? They reported seeing like what you're talking about, the tops of pyramids or the tops of large cities of these stone structures. You know, there's no cameras. Back then you don't have a camera you could fly and take a good picture with or any of that. And most of them probably couldn't afford to carry one with them. So they would report, and like you're talking about, you can't drop a pin. You would have to start circling, really work your way down, take your readings with your comp, all the crazy things you would do for it, and they didn't do it. They would just report. It's not like they flew over the top. They would see it sticking up out of the trees maybe 2 miles off. They'd be like, why is – that's not a peak. That's a building.
Yeah.
And then that's where – and then, of course, you don't look at it. It probably doesn't take – no time for it to cover up. I remember hearing stories about how fast the Amazon would reclaim things. Like guys would talk about cutting trails. And by the next morning, you couldn't even tell where you had cut the trail. Everything had filled back in, right? Where you were like, man. So I'm not surprised anything they find out there in the Amazon. I think they're going to find so much more once they go to
the market. Right. They found, because of the use of LIDAR and stuff, they've found all these major roads.
In a small section. They've not even LIDAR'd. What was the square mileage we talked about? Like 200? Not even that much.
It's a very small amount because they have to go through it inch by inch.
Yeah.
But they have found roads and aqueducts and all these crazy
things.
I think of like the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Remember when they're like pulling the leaves back and they find this, you know, entrance to the cave? Like that stuff could be out there.
If only you spoke Cavitos.
Yeah, right. You know, that kind of stuff. But that's what it makes me think of. And it's like a very romantic idea, right? To think of a place like that still exists. Machu Picchu, that's the place I couldn't think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
That wasn't even discovered until July 24th, 1911.
Can you imagine?
That's what I'm saying.
Imagine just rolling around in the mountains like that and you get up and you're like, wait a minute, what is up there? Now, of course, we use the word discovered loosely. I'm sure the natives in the area knew exactly what it was.
They were
telling you everybody. And again, people not listening to the locals.
Hiram Bingham was his name. He was a Yale history lecturer, and he was out there on a discovery or a tour. He didn't know what he was going to find. He was out there looking around, and one of the locals was like, "Well, if you like that, you might want to go look over here." It's like, "What are you talking about?" They took him up there. The guy showed him, and it was like, holy cow, this is here. History. Yeah. That, I mean,
I can't imagine being like seeing those. But that's just, as y'all can already tell from the very first episode till this 10 years later, how giddy we get. Ancient history is our favorite above everything. We just giddy it up with it. Like, I love the strange and unusual. It is fun. But ancient history just, I think I have more ancient history books than any other books in my collection.
Yeah. And we in the beginning, we used to do a lot of podcast on the topics, but we slowly morphed into something else. It's because it wasn't really getting, apparently a lot of other people didn't care for it. So,
well, yeah. And I mean, we could always go back and revisit it.
I think it's good to sprinkle
we
it in.
We could always, right? Go back and talk about some more of these crazy old mysteries like that. I just love it.
And then, of course, the third thing we talked about was Bigfoot, but we don't really need to
Bigfoot.
Break that down. Everybody listening knows exactly
what Bigfoot
is. Well, I don't
know. In case y'all don't know, okay, there's this.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what we discussed on the very first episode.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, and here we are.
Pre-Little Fizzy?
Man, oh man.
He was real close to right in there.
Yeah, he was born in 2011.
So yeah, he was a young.
He was a baby, yeah.
He was a young'un.
And the Brud were very small. They were like 7, I think.
I remember recording, they would come and bang on the door.
Oh, yeah. Right. They just want to play with the microphones.
Yeah, you'd have to wait till you put them to bed so you could record. Because if they knew you was out there, they would either open the door, they're banging on the door, they want to be in. Yeah, it was hurting.
Well, you remember the first studio, we had to make it, we tried to make it soundproof so it wouldn't echo and stuff. The downsides is it wasn't air conditioned. So in the summer, we would literally have to wait till like 1 a.m. to record.
Yep.
When it would only be like 85 in there.
We would be sitting in shorts and nothing else. No shirts, no shoes, no socks, just me and Kyle in shorts doing our show, sweating like we were in a pizza oven.
Yeah, that was back in the day.
And it was, you also remember we'd take the little heater.
In the winter, yeah.
And we'd have to crank the little heater up and let it get the room warm, but it made too much noise when you were talking. And we would turn it all off, and then we'd have to record, and we'd have to crank it on again. Yeah, it was good times back then.
Well, that's because we didn't know that you needed a gate limiter on your microphone, right? So this was all things we learned in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, we're complete idiots. But it has been one heck of a ride.
It's one heck of a ride.
We really appreciate each and every one of y'all. Everyone that's written messages to us, that wrote stuff on our post, that wrote all of it. I mean, it truly means everything to us.
Yeah, and if you want to help us out, and it doesn't cost you any money or anything, if you're listening to us on YouTube, please go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It helps us out. You may not think it's much, but man, every little bit of that helps. We're trying to grow the channel.
Whether you listen to it there or not, if you have a YouTube channel, please subscribe. And also, reviews. Write reviews at Apple. Go on there.
Or Spotify.
Pump out
you can
reviews.
Do them anywhere.
Yeah, pump out the reviews. It helps. If you do it on Apple, it helps us on iTunes. You do it on Spotify, it helps on Spotify. Just submit reviews, the whole thing. It's great. That's if you want to just be a team player, the week would really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, the YouTube subscriptions thing is what I want.
Yeah.
You know, that really helps.
We broke 30,000.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We got it up past that.
Before we get out of here, let's get into some crazy stories. Let's do what our bread and butter, right?
All right. I have got some. Hold on here. Let me get this one pulled up. What is this on my thing? What is this? Get off of my screen. I don't know why they get. Look, I've got some crazy stories. First one I'm going to have to drop on y'all is because simply of the Glimmer Man.
Oh, we got a new one?
Not really new one. This is back a while, but I just wanted to talk about this again because of what it says. Listen to this. It was in late summer afternoon of 2017. My husband and I were sitting on our sun porch. It says it's a side porch that looks out over our driveway towards our neighbor's property with this giant pine tree. My husband asks, "Do you see what I see?" And it just so happens that I did. Now, he never described what he was looking at, but he pointed. And following that, I saw a creature that looked like in the movie Predator. It was transparent, kneeling and looking at us from a high perch up in the tree. Now, you could only see the outline when it moved, and it appeared weightless because it was up so high in the tree. And those branches, again, can't hold much weight. Now, we get that statement from stuff when people are talking about Glimmer Man, when people are talking about any kind of unnormal unknown paranormal-looking creature up in the trees, all the way around to where we've had it with shadow creatures. They're like, it's not even Thunderbirds.
Right.
The limbs aren't reacting.
Yes.
At certain times. Now, we've also got them where the Thunderbirds or something where you can tell the limbs are bending. It's moving like it's physically interacting. And then some of the times it doesn't at all, which, of course, is very, very strange. Now, it says that it was staring at us when we realized that we saw it and it went behind the main body of the tree and then it disappeared. This was the first time my husband seeing anything with me. And so it changed his whole perspective. Now, of course, he's more open minded and not too quick to dispute when I share things that I've seen. Now, he's ex-military. He's been all over the world. But this was at his home where he saw something that couldn't be explained. And we both saw it without a doubt. Now, it says those semi-invisible beings, I don't know for certain what they are. We both have theories. But what I know for certain is that they look like a cloaked alien or the cloaked alien from the movie Predator when it's transparent. And it has a lizard-shaped head. Now, that is interesting because now we're starting to get back into the reptilians, right?
Right.
Well, we've always been told that the reptilians are humanoid.
Humanoid. Extraterrestrial.
Yep. We've also been told that they're underground. And we've talked about the fights and the guys getting his hand shot off and special dudes. Getting,
oh, Phil Schneider.
That's right.
I love that story. I love that story. I hope that story's real.
It is to me. I love it.
He was mysteriously killed by piano wire. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that is odd. There's been a lot of that, right? It's kind of strange. So I'm just wondering, maybe now that's a whole new thing, is maybe it's the reptilians that we're seeing.
Maybe. Maybe that's they have the ability to cloak themselves.
Yeah, right? And that's them looking in on us, keeping an eye on us. That would. Now, I don't know the whole thing about being in people's homes, but at least there's that.
Right. Check this out. Mickey from Dallas writes in, and he says, I have an experience I want to share with you guys and the listeners that happened to me in 1978. Cam, check this out. It says, I used to attend Kansas State University.
Uh-oh.
I graduated there and it was about 1978. About once a month, I would take I-70 West and go to Kansas City, Kansas, and party with some friends and go out Saturday night. Then Sunday, we'd all have a big lunch and I'd drive back to Manhattan, Kansas for another week of school. One day, there was snow on the ground. It was cold. It was in November. And I was about halfway to Manhattan when I was really sleepy. So I pulled my 71 Chevelle over that had a really bad leaky exhaust system. And it was kind of stupid, but I sat there on the side of the road. I rolled the windows up. I left the engine on with the heater going to keep me warm, and I soon fell asleep. I was going to take a nap, but I fell asleep and slept longer. The next thing I know, I hear this tapping. Rap, tap, tapping on the window.
On my bedroom door.
I look over and there's a little man standing outside. I rolled the window down and he said, hey, I just stopped to check on you. Are you okay? And I said, I'm fine. Thank you. So he started to walk back to the back of the car. And then I realized my car was full of carbon monoxide. My eyes were burning. So I shut it off real quick. Reached over and rolled down the driver window and got out. I could have died, and I was going to thank that guy for saving me. Well, I looked, and I could see about 2 miles in each direction on I-70. It was flat, and this was just before sunset, and there were no cars anywhere. No man either. So I got back in my car, and I drove about 80 miles an hour for about 5 or 10 minutes trying to find this guy so I could thank him. I wanted to just shake his hand and say, thank you for saving my life, dude. But I never caught up to him, and I never could find him.
Huh.
So about 3 weeks later, the next month, I was on my same trip. I went down for the weekend. I was coming back on Sunday. It was earlier in the day this time, and there was no snow on the ground. I happened to recognize the area where I had stopped before to take a rest because there was this kind of weird-looking tree there. It was kind of crooked. So I thought, why not? I'd get out and I'll stretch my legs. So I pulled over and I shut the car off. I got out and walked over towards the ditch side, and there was your typical barbed wire fence that you'd see out here in the country. But what I noticed that I didn't notice before is when I looked over the fence, there was this grassy area with a bunch of tombstones. And so right at the area where I stopped, where this little man saved my life, there was like a family-sized graveyard. I looked over the fence and I just said, thank you. Got back in my car and I left. And I always wonder to this day, was that a ghost of a man from that graveyard that saved my life? Mickey.
That's awesome.
crazy, right?
That's, but it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, not on my watch, buddy.
Well, you know, and strange things that people have seen over time, it always makes you wonder. You don't know what's underneath you. Maybe there's an ancient burial ground underneath you.
That's true.
You're not even aware of it.
That's true.
Right? Very, very cool. I enjoyed that.
I've got you something here that Lon sent me that I know you're going to like because it's talking about the Menahuni.
Oh, yeah. The Menahuni are from Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, this actually took place back in 98 in Maui.
Okay.
So it says, I should share my story about the Menahuni in 98 in Maui, and I was headed to the hotel in a shuttle service when I saw this little dude sitting on a fence wire. Now, I had to check and recheck what I was seeing, but sure as summer, this little dude was just sitting with his legs dangling. Now, as we got closer, he morphed into a plastic bag stuck on the barb. Now, I saw him a couple more times around the island, and my wife actually thought I wasn't crazy. One day, in the gift shop, I saw a keychain with a little figure that was the dude. All excited, I picked it up and I yelled to my wife across the store, "It's him! It's him!" And the elder native that was working asked me, "Have you seen him?" And I responded, "Yes, sir, several times since I got here last week." He said that there were a blessing, and they were blessing my journey and a reason for coming to the island, and that I was a very special and lucky person for getting to see him, of course. And after talking for a little while, he decided to share with me a local custom. He said kind of vaguely, "Drive up the coast, you'll know when you get there." Well, the next morning, my wife and I got up and took off on a drive up the coast to a destination we didn't know. As we drove and drove, I wondered where I was driving to. Did I pass it? When we came around the corner and on the ocean side of the road, there's a meadow and a grotto. The energy present was very nice, and I slammed on the brakes and shouted, "There it is!" We parked and walked into the field. The earth felt hollowed. It felt like you should not get off the path. And as we walked, as we strolled in, of course, we began seeing in various sizes stones that had been stacked in little monolithic styles. You know, like at the river when someone stacks up a few river rocks and makes a statue. Still in awe at how many, probably hundreds of, stacks were all over a very large area of rolling hills. And as we walked along, we came to a spot that had a bunch of rocks lying in a circle that had not been stacked up. We walked around and all the way to the end of the trail. There was only one circle of rocks and hundreds of stacks. I knew that the circle of rocks was for. Or I knew what it was for. We went back and I made my own miniature stone megalithic. And as I built it, I could hear them gathered around, but I never saw them again. And the night before we left, I went to the gift shop. And we had talked about, we'd had, of course, he says, fertility issues. And the night before we left there, my wife got pregnant.
Wow.
Says, this is the blessing of the Menahuni, and this is the story, or my story, of the Menahuni, D.C.
That's pretty cool. I've never been to Hawaii, but my wife's been. I would love to go, if I ever get over there, and check out some of the, in person, some of the folklore, you know?
Oh, yeah. The whole idea, the Menahuni stories are the greatest thing to me. I love every bit of it.
I agree 100%. Check
Lay it on, man. What have we got?
It says, "Hi, I've been searching the internet for years for an explanation of what myself and husband saw back in July 1997 in Washington on a warm summer night around 10 p.m. These things began to glide over the evergreen tree line into the moonlight, which made them very, very visible. When I say things, is because there were two of them, and I don't want to say what I thought they were, but they looked like pterosaurs. They had the wingspan of a Cessna airplane, but they were kind of transparent almost, flying or swimming high in the sky near the beach and over my in-law's house. The head was clearly similar to a prehistoric bird with a pterodactyl-type beak, and although the body wings reminded us of a stingray because it had no feathers, it had feet and a long prehistoric bird-like tail. They seemed to glide in the air. They glided about 10 feet above our heads like Wonder Woman's airplane. Hold a glass underwater and examine how that looks. You can clearly see the shape, but not much more. That is exactly how it looked in the moonlight. It took on the reflection of everything around it, like reflective glass when the light hits it just right. They made no noise, just completely silent. One swooped down so low that if we had stood on his dad's truck, we probably could have reached up and touched it as it flew overhead. It glided above us and seemed to almost run into the neighbor's house. Then it veered and glided down the street. It then flew off into the darkness. We heard no wing flapping. It was completely silent, like an image of something. Nothing of the, no one in the family believed what we saw. I wouldn't have believed my husband either, except I saw it with my own eyes. We didn't feel threatened by them, and they didn't seem to be stalking us. They just seemed to be cruising by. I hope this mystery's solved, but I don't think it ever will be. I don't know if it was two dimensions colliding for a brief bit of time, but it seemed prehistoric. I'm religious, so I had also wondered if it could have been spiritual. Thanks for all you do, Kelsey. Wow, right? It's like...
With the no flapping.
No flapping, and it looks like a pterosaur, but it's also like clear like the Glimmer Man. Like, is this like the ghost of a pterosaur? We always talk about the ghost of a pterosaur. Well, if you can see a ghost of a person, why couldn't you see... Or the ghost of one of your pets, why couldn't you see the ghost of a dinosaur?
And it might be like you've discussed too, is it's one of those flaps that it replays there.
Yeah, right. It's like over and over and over.
It's like a memory the area has.
Yeah, you're right. It's like a memory.
There was another part I was going to bring up on that story that I told about the Minnehuni was whenever he talks about seeing it turn into a plastic bag stuck on a barb.
Really? The more of the trash bag duendes.
You start really thinking about it. It just makes sense. Like we've discussed, it seems to be fae related when you get into that, right?
Right.
Something crazy. Look, I've got another one here as far as the little people of the woods, if you will. Says the witness was on a weekend canoeing trip for rest and relaxation in a remote area of Rough River State Park, Kentucky, on June 24th, 2003. He was strangely queasy and anxious for some unknown reason. And for some unknown reason, he felt like he had something there to fear. So heeding these sensations, he was extremely cautious on the river. But after several miles, he paddled the canoe to the riverbank and tied it off to a tree. Got out to explore the area. Looking 8 to 10 feet downstream, he spotted what looked like the top of a gray clay jar peeking out of the water. His first thoughts were that maybe he'd found a native person's artifact. So he started down the bank toward the creek, which was extremely slippery with mud. He stopped just short of the water and very close to the old earthenware pot. It was more like a clay crock. And he soon realized that it probably wasn't very old. He poked at it and noticed that there were some small handprints on it. He thought it could have been raccoon prints, but they were more like little human handprints about an inch wide. So he tried to pry the thing loose using a stick, but suddenly heard a noise. He heard what sounded like children laughing in the distance. The sound wasn't coming from downstream. When he managed to pull the crock jar out of the mud, something let out a scream, and it sounded like a little girl, very high-pitched and loud. Not knowing what to do, he grabbed the jar and began to scramble up the muddy bank. Glancing back, he thought he saw something move along the creek. He stopped and sat at the top of the bank for a moment, looking at the jar, trying to comprehend the handprints. After a few minutes, he laid the crock down, got up, and walked along the creek, stopping every once in a while to peek through the bushes to see if anybody was there. At one point, he looked over the bank and noticed two little people standing about a foot tall. They had pale skin, little brown leather pants held up by suspenders, no shirts, and little pointy hats made of what looked like leather. They had leather foot coverings that went up past the ankle. Their hair was reddish in color and their eyes blue. Their hands were only about an inch wide. They knew he was watching, but they continued their task of pulling some kind of wooded stump down the muddy creek bank with long leather ropes or strings. These little men were surprisingly clean for the work that they were doing. He then heard a thump back where he had first gone in the creek, looked back, and there were three more of the little men exactly like these first two. They had pushed the crock jar back down the bank. They were all laughing, high-pitched laughter, like a bunch of kids. He then heard a loud snap, and they were all gone. Their footprints were plainly visible in the mud, but they were gone along with the crock jar and the wooded stump. They had vanished in a split second. He walked around in an attempt to pick up a trail, but to no avail. He then continued his trip with no other incidents.
Wow. So I love stories like that, right?
In Kentucky, he had some sort of little people encounter like that.
You know what's crazy is if you go back and look at a lot of alien sightings, some of them have little hats on.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder when you go back in time to all these oldest folklore in Ireland and places like that. You know, they talk about them being fairies or fae folk, but were they in fact extraterrestrials? And that was just their way of describing them.
I tell you what I find, and it may be, but what I find so amusing about these stories that involve the little people, when people, and we've got several that we've discussed over the years, where people see them involved in activity like this. They're dragging a stump, they're stealing a jar. If you're a fae and you're a gnome or what, why?
Right.
Why are you doing it? Is that your job? Do they go back and tell their family, we saw one of the tall folk?
Like, you won't believe it.
I don't know what the tall folk do. Every time we see them, they're splashing in the water or they're boating. You know, like, it's crazy. The life the tall folk leave is so insane, right? Everything that they lead. Because I always wonder, like, if that's not their job, are they a recovery team? Did these things fall out of the fae realm and the fae wild and they had to go gather them up and bring them back?
It's a good point.
It's strange. It just doesn't make any sense unless they are feeding off of your discomfort. But if that's a fact, like we've discussed, then why are you doing physical labor? You just being present is going to cause a discomfort.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's a very strange, it almost feels like they're not much different than us. Like, it's one of those that they don't live without us, we don't live without them. It is a very unified balance is what it almost feels like in this whole realm.
I love the story of the little people, though.
Oh, I love them.
The little hunters. That's one of our most popular episodes. And every time we do another podcast, they always want Cam to tell the story about the little hunters. Like,
oh, yeah.
They love it. Can you tell us about that?
They love it. I hadn't talked to Doc in a long while. I need to see if he's still on the place.
That's cool.
Not as far as I know.
Speaking of talking to some people, we need to get out in the field and stuff. There was a new, if you have Netflix, there's a new series on there called Encounters, and it's about UFOs, of course. But there's only like 4 or 5 episodes, but the very first episode is about the Stephenville Lights.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows a whole bunch of people on there from around and some of the places I recognized. I'm like, you know what? Might be a good idea to go down there and talk to some of the people and actually interview them, and maybe they can put us in contact with some actual farmers or ranchers out there that wouldn't mind coming on microphone and telling their side of the story, because that's a fascinating case.
Yes.
And the fact that it only took place 20 miles from Skeleton Studios,
right.
It's almost crazy that after a decade, we've never taken our butts out there. We've gone down there to play disc golf.
And eat and do everything else. You go to Stephenville all the time.
Play baseball. We beat a team from Dublin down there, which is right next to Stephenville.
Yep.
But we really should probably do that. But that Netflix series is pretty cool. You should check it out.
Tarleton's D1 in football now.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's a little university down there in Stephenville.
Well, I got one more here before we get out of here. Check this out. This is also like a flying cryptid.
Yeah.
It says, I live in the greater Baltimore area.
Congratulations.
Of Maryland, in a suburb in the woods near an early colonial settlement. I've experienced multiple phenomena that I cannot explain. Things I can only describe as cryptids. I hope you find what you are looking for in my story. Regarding a bat-like creature, what I saw did not look like a bat, but it was large and it had wings. It was very late on a summer night in 2016, and I was 18 or so. I'd just gotten into an argument with my then-girlfriend and was sitting on my porch smoking a cigarette.
Here we go.
In front of my porch was my short driveway that led to the street.
Blaze on.
Now, this is a newer neighborhood and fairly well lit. I saw what can only be described as the silhouette of a large winged creature. The wingspan was at least 6 feet wide, if not more. But I saw no body, no torso, no wings in the true sense. It was almost like a shadow of a large crane's skeleton. I know that doesn't make sense, but that's how it appeared to me. The wings were but a thin projection, like the bones of a bird's wings. There was no skin flap, like in bats, or feathers like on a bird. The rest of the body was similar, more like the suggestion of a body in the shadow form. The way it moved, well, it truly terrified me. Now, I'm an avid outdoorsman. I've seen cranes, geese, swans, hawks, literally hundreds of times during hikes and camping trips. I've never seen an animal move in this way. It glided with a grace, a timelessness even, that I don't think a physical animal could manage. I was horrified. I ran down my driveway. It had flown directly overhead towards the street, but I did not see it again. I called my girlfriend crying. I was absolutely terrified. Alex. So even he admits that it didn't look physical. Like he was seeing something, like an image of something, like from a parallel dimension, from another time.
That's so wild.
Like he didn't know what it was, but it didn't seem natural. It didn't move natural. There was just something about it that didn't quite seem right. And that's the hardest part when it comes to these comes to these stories is like, I don't have an explanation. I'm glad you sent that in. Thank you for sending it in. But I really don't know what you saw that day. It's crazy how many people see strange things that they just can't describe or, you know, they feel uncomfortable bringing it up.
I always think about that is like something, if it is something that is somewhat intelligent, then it's getting something from those people.
Right. You might be right. Like an energy vampire.
Yeah, it's Colin Robinson, right? It's feeding on them in some form or fashion like that. Draining them, if you will. It is wild. We have, 10 years of all of the stories, all of the people we've met, all the friends that we've made, all the places we've been. I'll tell you this. When we started this, I didn't think it would go like this.
I didn't either. I mean, we were hoping to get 300 people to listen.
To get 300 people to listen in 12 months' time.
It's insane.
And then it's just grown to this. And now I don't see us stopping anytime soon at all. Like, I see this going on until probably one of us is dead or something else happens and we just can't do it anymore. If we move apart, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
What's crazy is, like, all the emails that we've gotten over the years. I mean, like, I get them every week. Mm-hmm. Mary will bring some new ones to me. And, you know, in the beginning, I'd be shocked or surprised. And now I'm like, man, I'm not anymore. I've become used to it. It's become normal. What I've learned, if anything, is that everybody has some strange sighting or experience in their life. Everybody. It's just the degrees of what it is, right? Very, very cool. Well, if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, please do not hesitate. Email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. 888-393-BRUD. We love hearing your beautiful voices.
Yeah.
And like I said, if you really want to help us out, even if you don't listen to us on YouTube, go over to YouTube, subscribe to Expanded Perspectives channel. It just helps us out. It doesn't cost you anything. It's you know, the HBO special, the Help a Brother Out special.
That's right.
Like, hook us up. Also with hooking up, don't forget about Factor Meals. Head to factormeals.com/expanded50. And don't forget to use the code EXPANDED50 to get 50% off. That's code EXPANDED50 at factormeals.com/EXPANDED50 to get 50% off. I hope everybody has a good week. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Man, oh man, I've got a bunch of stuff coming up on Elite. Storytime with Uncle Ham's firing up this week, and I have got a bunch of wild ones to get to tell some stories on. Try a little bit of fun there. We went and spent some time in the trees. With deer season firing up and with the weather getting better, so I'm hopefully to be outside, but I don't know. What about you? You going to be busy this whole week?
Hopefully. I've been actually kind of slow lately. I'd like to get busy.
We got
to
get you busy or you're going to get in trouble. We got to keep Kyle busy and out of trouble.
That is right. I also went hunting, and man, I really didn't see much. I saw a couple birds. I saw a cottontail and a grasshopper.
Nice.
I would not leave my blind. And that was about it.
So. I saw one doe at about 75 yards. She cruised by. Like, she didn't care I was there. And for an hour and a half, I had a small football, like if you look at like the small orb. Nerf footballs, like an orb. Yeah. Armadillo. He was around within 30, 40 feet of me at all times and just hung out. And that was it. So I just got to hang out with my armadillo friend all
weekend. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So
it was that. You ever been to an armadillo race?
No, I have not.
You've never seen one even?
I've seen them, yes, but I've never actually attended one. I would like to go attend the bullfrog jumping competition to watch the guys have their champion bullfrogs leap.
Me and my wife, we're going to the state fair, I think, this week one day, actually.
Has been asking to go this year, just her and I. She wants to go during the week and run over there.
You should, because as an adult, you know, you remember when you used to take your kids, but the kids want to go to the Midway. They want to play the games, the rides. When you go in as a, with just your wife solo, no kids, it's way more enjoyable. You can look at all the neat stuff, all the shopping, enjoy some good food and snacks. I say you should do it.
I just want to go over there for a turkey leg.
We do it every year, and it's a good time.
Have to check it out.
I think Texas OU weekend's coming up soon, so you want to do it.
This coming weekend.
You don't want to do it then, so do it before or after, not then. It's a madhouse, right?
It's a popper, because that is A&M's taking on Alabama at Kyle Field and Texas OU.
I got you.
Yeah, and I think there's one more. So, yeah, it's going to be a big – it's a big deal in Texas this coming up this whole week.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Till next time, folks, be safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.